So, have you ever found yourself in one of those minor disagreements, like maybe over a property line with a neighbor or just some shared project at
Oh,
work?
yeah, where you think it's going to take 5 minutes to resolve.
Exactly. And then before you know it, that tiny little spark has just spiraled into this incredibly complex bureaucratic chess match.
Right, where you're not even arguing about the original thing anymore.
No, not at all. You are suddenly arguing about the actual rules of how to argue, which is just wild to me.
It is, but it happens all the time.
It really does. So today, for you listening, we're taking a deep dive into a stack of primary source documents. We've got court dockets, administrative motions, appeals, all at Maricopa County, Arizona.
Yeah, and this paper trail is just fascinating.
It is, because it shows exactly what happens when one homeowner takes that bureaucratic chess match to the absolute brink.
I mean, we're essentially looking at a master class in administrative law today. And it starts with something so incredibly mundane that you could just walk right past it on the street.
An HOA election.
Exactly, a homeowners association election. But when you apply the legal magnifying glass to these filings, I mean, it just explodes into this fractal of complexity.
Yeah, it really gets into the weeds fast.
Right, so we are going to dissect the really unforgiving rules of legal evidence. We'll explore the rigid hierarchy of these courts and look at what happens when our traditional paper-based laws just violently collide with modern digital technology.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the inciting incident here happens in the spring, specifically around April of 2024.
Right.
And we have this entity called the AZNH Revocable Trust.
Yeah.
And they're represented by its trustees, John and Susan Sullivan.
And we should mention, John Sullivan is actually an attorney himself.
Yes, which is such a crucial detail for how all of this plays out later.
It completely informs his strategy.
Exactly. So John files a dispute petition against his neighborhood, which is the Sunland Springs Village Homeowners Association.
A fairly typical starting point for these things.
Very typical. And his claim is that the HOA violated a very specific state law. It's known as ARS Section 33-1812. He says they failed to produce election materials from a vote that was held, I think, a couple of months prior in February.
Right, so let's break down that legal citation for a second because it really is the bedrock of everything that follows in this dispute.
Yeah, please do.
So ARS just stands for Arizona Revised Statutes.
Which is basically just the official rule book for the state, right?
Exactly. It's simply the codified laws of Arizona. And Section 33 deals specifically with property.
Okay.
And then the 1812 part, that falls under the Planned Communities Act. So this specific statute legally mandates that an HOA must retain all ballots and related materials from an election and make them available for inspection by the members.
Which makes total sense. I mean, the why behind this law is just fundamental transparency.
Absolutely.
Like if a homeowner suspects an election was miscounted or maybe even rigged, the state is basically saying that a physical paper trail absolutely must exist. You know, so the homeowner can audit the results.
Yeah, they have to be able to double check the math.
Right. So Sullivan invokes this transparency law. He essentially goes to the HOA and says, show me the paper trail. Give me the ballots, the envelopes, the sign-in sheets, all of it.
Which seems like the most straightforward request imaginable, right?
You would think. You ask for the records, the HOA brings out the dusty cardboard boxes, and you just sit there and count them up.
Right. But the HOA's response to this request is where we hit the very first massive friction point of this entire deep dive.
Yeah, this is where it gets weird.
Because the HOA tells Sullivan that they absolutely did comply with the law, and they actually hand over all the physical paper ballots that were cast.
Okay, so they did have paper ballots.
They did, for some of the votes, but for a really large portion of the votes, the ones that were cast electronically through a third-party vendor called Vote Husary. Now they claim there is literally nothing to produce.
Wait, nothing? How can there be nothing if people voted?
Well, their defense hinges on this highly technical, basically semantic interpretation of the word ballot.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. The HOA argues that this Vote HOA Now platform, it operates within a dynamic software environment.
Yeah.
So when a resident logs in to vote, they are just interacting with a screen.
A user interface.
Exactly, a graphical user interface. So
right.
When the resident makes a selection, a database somewhere just logs a preference in a server.
Okay, I follow that.
Right, but the HOA's legal position is that under the law, a ballot is a discrete, tangible object, like a piece of paper.
I see where they are going with this.
Yeah, because the software uses this continuous database rather than generating like individual printable digital documents for each specific vote, they argue no electronic ballots actually exist.
That is quite the leap.
Right. And therefore, they claim they cannot possibly be withholding something that fundamentally does not exist in the real world.
I gotta be honest, I struggle to accept that logic. And I imagine anyone listening who uses, you know, any modern technology would struggle with it too.
It definitely feels like a stretch.
Let's look at this through a functional lens for a second. Let's use an analogy.
Okay, hit me.
So if you order a pizza on an app on your phone, right? You select your crust, you pick your toppings, maybe pepperoni and mushrooms, and you hit submit.
Sounds good.
That digital interface, the app, acts as your order form. The restaurant receives that data, and they bake your pizza.
Right, they get the instruction.
But if they mess up, and you call to dispute the toppings,
mm-hmm.
and the manager says, well, you didn't fill out a physical form, you just interacted with a graphical user interface, so legally no order exists. I mean, you would think they were completely out of their mind.
You'd probably never order from there again.
Exactly. The digital interface is the mechanism of the order. So how on earth can a digital voting interface that explicitly records a vote not be legally considered a ballot? It's the functional equivalent.
Functionally, yeah, your pizza analogy is completely spot on.
Thank you.
But legally, words have incredibly rigid boundaries, especially when you're dealing with a statute that was clearly written with analog paper-based concepts in mind.
Okay, so the law hasn't caught up to the tech.
Exactly. And the administrative law judge, the ALJ, who's presiding over the initial Department of Real Estate hearing, they had to look at the strict literal letter of the Arizona revised statutes.
So the judge couldn't just use common sense?
Not when the statute is that specific. The HOA actually brought in evidence detailing their technical architecture. They demonstrated their compliance with the paper records they did have.
Right.
And looking solely at that very narrow definition of a tangible ballot, the ALJ actually sided with the HOA.
Wow. Really?
Yes. The judge found that the association had met its statutory burden under the analog wording of the law, and they formally denied Sullivan's petition in November of 2024.
That is wild. So Sullivan loses the first round on basically a technicality of what the word ballot means.
Essentially, yes.
But hitting that bureaucratic wall at the administrative level, it forces a massive change in strategy for Sullivan. Because if arguing the philosophy and semantics of a ballot isn't going to work, he needs hard proof.
He needs a smoking gun.
Exactly. He needs something to blow the HOA's technical software defense completely out of the water. And interestingly enough, he eventually claims to find exactly that.
Yeah, he unearths two very specific items that change the whole trajectory of this case.
Right. So he finds, first, a computer screenshot of the actual VoteAway or Now user interface. And second, he finds a 50-second promotional video that was actually produced by the vendor themselves.
Which is huge.
It is, because Sullivan argues that the interface screenshot looks and acts exactly like a traditional ballot.
It mimics the analog experience.
Exactly. And furthermore, he claims this 50-second vendor video explicitly proves that the HOA attorney was just hiding behind a false technicality when they claimed no digital ballots were used.
So armed with this brand new evidence, Sullivan has to navigate this really complex procedural hurdle.
Because the case is already closed, right?
Right. He is trapped at the administrative agency level, his case has been shut down, and his request for a rehearing at that level has already been denied by January 2025.
So he can't just go back to the same judge and say, wait, look what I found.
No, he cannot. To introduce this newly discovered video and the screenshot, he has to elevate the fight. He has to appeal the decision out of the administrative agency entirely and take it up to the Maricopa County Superior Court.
Which is a real court with a real civil judge.
Exactly. But to do this, he has to utilize a framework known as JRD.
JRD. Okay, I love a good legal acronym. What does that stand for?
It stands for the Rules of Procedure for Judicial Review of Administrative Decisions.
Let's unpack JRD for a moment for the listener, because I know you cannot just waltz into a superior courtroom, drop a flash drive with a video on the judge's desk, and demand a do-over.
Oh, absolutely not. The rules for introducing new evidence on an appeal are notoriously strict.
Right, because otherwise everyone who loses would just keep appealing with new evidence forever.
Incredibly strict. The primary job of a superior court judge in a JRD appeal is basically to act as a reviewer, not a trial judge.
So they aren't listening to witnesses all over again?
No, they don't do that. They just look at the transcript and the evidence from the lower administrative hearing to see if that administrative judge made a blatant, obvious legal error.
Okay, making sure the lubber judge followed the rules.
Right. It is not an opportunity for what we call trial de novo, which just means you don't get to start from scratch.
But Sullivan has this new video, so how does he get it in?
Well, JRA Rule 10 contains this very tightly guarded exception. It allows a party to introduce new evidence that simply wasn't available at the time of the original hearing.
Okay, but there's a catch, I assume.
A huge catch. Provided they file a very, very specific written motion. You cannot be vague. You must identify exactly what you want to introduce and explain exactly why it is material to the case.
Knowing this, Sullivan employs a highly calculated strategy. I mean, we can call it the strategy of specificity.
That's a good name for it.
Yeah, because in his memorandum to the Superior Court, he doesn't ask the judge to reopen the entire messy HOA dispute. He doesn't say, let's do the whole trial over.
No, he's much smarter than that.
Right. He asks the court to conduct a brief evidentiary hearing for the, and this is a direct quote from his motion, for the sole purpose of admitting just two things, the electronic ballot screenshot and the vendor video.
That's it. Nothing else.
Just those two items. He is purposely minimizing his request to maximize the chances of the judge actually saying yes.
It really is a textbook tactical move.
Yes.
He is painting this as a minor, painless little administrative correction for the judge.
Like, hey, judge, this will just take 5 minutes, I promise.
Exactly. But, and this is the crazy part, this hyper-specific wording is about to become the very thing that traps him later on.
Oh, man, the irony. Okay, so this brings us to the desk of the Honorable Judge Joseph P. McKeedish of the Maricopa County Superior Court.
Right.
So Judge McKeedish reviews Sullivan's appeal. He reads the motion to introduce new evidence, and he reviews the HOA's counterarguments, which I'm sure were fierce.
Oh, they definitely didn't want that video admitted.
But rather than holding a hearing right there in his own Superior Court courtroom, Judge McKeedish applies a legal principle called specialized competence.
Yes.
So in April 2025, he issues an order of dismissal. But it is a really highly nuanced dismissal.
It is. The judge actually agrees with the HOA's underlying argument on one key point. He says that resolving the technical nature of these electronic documents, you know, analyzing software architectures, looking at vendor contracts, that requires specialized expertise.
Expertise that he, as a Superior Court judge, doesn't necessarily have.
Right. He says that expertise belongs to the Office of Administrative Hearings, or the OAH.
So the judge is basically establishing a really clear jurisdictional boundary here.
He is. He's a generalist. Superior Court judges handle everything from, you know, corporate lawsuits to criminal trials to family law.
Jack of all trades, master of none, in a way.
Exactly. But the administrative judges at the OAH, they spend their entire careers down in the microscopic weeds of HOA disputes and state real estate regulations. It's all they do.
So Judge McKeedish utilizes a mechanism called the doctrine of remand.
Remand, yes.
Let's define that. A remand is basically when an appellate court sends a case back down to a lower court or an agency for further action.
Right. He isn't just throwing the case in the trash.
No. The judge is essentially saying, look, Sullivan, your new evidence does warrant a second look, but the specialists downstairs at the agency are the ones who actually need to look at it.
To put this in everyday terms for you listening, it's kind of like a city building inspector.
Oh, I like this analogy.
So imagine the Superior Court judge is the city building inspector, and he's looking at a house that failed a plumbing inspection.
Okay.
And the homeowner brings in a new photo, new evidence, showing that the pipes might actually be fine.
Right.
The building inspector doesn't grab a wrench and start checking the pipes themselves, right? They remand the issue back to the master plumber, which is the OAH in our story, because the plumber is the specialist.
That analogy perfectly captures the division of labor here. It really does. But the most critical element of this entire saga is the precise language that Judge McKeedish uses in his remand order.
The wording is everything.
It really is. Because he doesn't just toss the case back down with a blank check, like, hey, figure this out.
No, he is very specific.
He explicitly orders the department to conduct a hearing, quote, to address the additional evidence proposed by plaintiff.
To address the additional evidence proposed by plaintiff.
Right.
And remember, Sullivan's proposed evidence was deliberately restricted.
Right. Back when he was using his strategy of specificity, he limited it to just the screenshot and the 50-second video.
Precisely. So Judge McKeedish intentionally mirrors Sullivan's own narrow request.
Ah.
Yeah, he places a locked collar around the remand. He creates this incredibly tightly bound process. The only thing they're allowed to look at downstairs is the video and the screenshot.
But of course, Once the case is actually sent back down to the administrative level, back to the administrative law judge, Kay Abramson, Sullivan completely abandons his narrow strategy.
He throws it right out the window.
He really does. So a new hearing is scheduled for the fall. And instead of just walking in and presenting his two little pieces of evidence, Sullivan pushes the boundaries hard.
He gets aggressive.
Very. He files a motion with the ALJ requesting what's called a subpoena duces tecum. He wants this for a vote eto executive named Ruth Ingoldsby.
Okay, let's define subpoena duces tecum for the listener because it's a great Latin phrase.
It sounds very intimidating.
It is. So a standard subpoena just compels a person to show up and testify, right?
Yes.
To sit in the chair and answer questions.
Right.
But the addition of duces tecum, which literally translates from Latin to bring with you, means that the person is legally compelled to bring specific physical documents or records with them to the hearing.
Okay, so he's not just saying, Ruth, come talk to us. He's saying, Ruth, come talk to us and empty your filing cabinets on the desk. And Sullivan isn't just asking her to bring, like, a corporate brochure. He demands that she produce a paper and electronic copy of the 2024 electronic ballots, which he claims are referenced in a brand newly discovered email chain from yet another vendor employee named Jonathan Lobley.
So he's introducing even more new stuff.
Tons of it. Sullivan is suddenly trying to bust the doors wide open. He wants to turn this limited, narrow review of a screenshot and a short video into a massive discovery fishing expedition. He wants to dig into the internal communications of the third-party vendor.
Which is exactly why ALJ Abramson so swiftly issues an order denying those subpoena requests.
He shuts it down.
Completely shuts it down in August 2025. She relies on a foundational legal principle of appellate jurisdiction. It's known as the strict mandate.
The strict mandate?
Yes. And the HOA's lawyers were very smart here. They cite a 2009 Arizona Court of Appeals precedent, a case called Bogard v. Cannon and Wendt Electric Co.
And what does that case establish?
It establishes that a lower court, or an agency, is strictly bound by the ruling of the higher court on remand. The lower court must follow the mandate of the higher court decision to the letter. No deviations allowed.
Okay, wait. I have to challenge the fairness of this strict mandate rule in this specific context.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because if the administrative court is supposed to be the master plumber seeking the actual truth of what happened, and a newly admitted video strongly suggests the vendor was lying about the existence of digital ballots,
right?
Why blindfold the court from pulling that thread?
That's a good question.
Right. Like, if the system sees smoke, why can't the judge just issue a subpoena to look for the fire? It feels like the legal system is protecting its own procedural architecture rather than actually seeking the objective truth of what happened in this neighborhood election.
That is a phenomenal philosophical critique of the justice system. I mean, honestly, it is a tension that law students debate constantly in their first year. Oh, yeah. What you are arguing for is equity. You're arguing for doing whatever it takes to find the absolute truth, regardless of the rules.
Yeah, exactly. Just find out what happened.
But the legal system doesn't always work that way. It often prioritizes finality and efficiency and rigid boundaries over an absolute boundless truth-seeking mission.
But why?
Because if a lower court could just constantly expand the scope of a remanded case, whenever they saw a little puff of smoke, cases would literally never end.
I guess that's true.
They would become these endless, spiraling, multi-year investigations over minor issues.
Going back to our building inspector analogy.
Right, let's use that.
The inspector remanded the case specifically to check the water heater based on a new photo.
Yep.
You were saying the homeowner can't suddenly demand that the master plumber also tear out all the electrical wiring and audit the concrete foundation, even if the homeowner strongly suspects those are faulty too.
Exactly. The legal mandate from the city inspector was exclusively for the water heater. That's it.
Okay, I see.
So applying that back to Sullivan, the Superior Court authorized a hearing strictly to look at the screenshot in the video. That was the water heater.
Right.
But by demanding internal vendor emails and demanding executive testimony from Ruth Ingoldsby, Sullivan was trying to tear out the electrical wiring.
It is expanding the scope.
Right. And ALJ Abramson correctly recognized that granting those subpoenas would be an illegal expansion of Judge Mikidish's strict mandate. She had zero legal authority to color outside the lines that the Superior Court had drawn for her.
Okay, when you put it that way, it makes perfect legal sense. But Sullivan's reaction to this denial, this is what launches us into the most chaotic phase of this entire dispute.
Oh, it gets messy.
So messy. Because Sullivan does not accept the ALJ's boundary. He doesn't just say, okay, well, I tried.
No, not at all.
Instead, he sprints right back up to the Superior Court. And in late August 2025, he files a highly aggressive document called a motion to enforce judgment and for order to show cause.
Which is a huge escalation.
It is. He essentially tells Judge Mikidish that the administrative agency downstairs is actively defying the court's April order. He says they are refusing to hold an evidentiary hearing and they are wrongfully denying his subpoenas.
A motion to enforce judgment is... It's a dramatic move. It is a formal demand for the judge to step in and compel compliance. And it often carries the implicit threat of contempt of court.
Wow.
Yeah. And the crazy part is, Sullivan directs this legal fire not just at the HOA, but at the ADRE itself, the Arizona Department of Real Estate.
He basically sues the government agency handling his case.
Essentially, yes.
And this is where the almost invisible labyrinthine architecture of state bureaucracy just fully reveals itself, because suddenly the big guns get involved. The Arizona Attorney General's office steps in.
Right, because an agency is being attacked in court.
Exactly. Assistant Attorneys General step in to represent the ADRE. And their defense in September 2025 is just a masterclass in bureaucratic deflection.
It really is.
They invoke ARS Section 322199.01. And they essentially tell the judge, hey, don't look at us. We are literally just the mailroom.
To understand why the Attorney General says this, you really have to look at how the Arizona legislature restructured things back in 2016.
Okay, give us the history.
So they passed a law that placed the initial intake of all HOA disputes under the Department of Real Estate.
The ABRE.
Right. But, and this is vital to understand Sullivan's mistake, they only gave the ADRE limited statutory authority as a conduit, a pathway.
Wait, why would the legislature design it that way? Like, why make an agency the intake point if they have literally no power to actually decide the case?
It mostly comes down to budget, efficiency, and the separation of powers.
The classic bureaucratic trinity.
Exactly. The state wanted a centralized, specialized place for homeowners to file complaints. They wanted to make sure these minor neighborhood disputes wouldn't clog up the standard civil courts, which are already overworked.
Makes sense.
But the ADRE is primarily a regulatory body for real estate licenses, you know. Mm. They don't have a stable of impartial trial judges on their staff.
Ah, okay.
So the law dictates that the ADRE acts strictly as a filter. They receive the petition from the homeowner. They check if the basic paperwork is filled out correctly. They make sure the filing fee is paid. And then the statute mandates they must refer the matter to the Office of Administrative Hearings, the OAH.
So the OAH is a completely separate entity from the ADR.
Entirely separate. They are in different buildings. The OAH provides independent administrative law judges for dozens of different state agencies, not just real estate.
Wow.
So once the ADRE hands the file to the OAH, the ADRE's job is completely done. They cannot conduct the hearing, they cannot take evidence, and they possess absolutely zero authority to direct an OAH judge to approve or deny a subpoena.
Okay, so let me get this straight. Sullivan is suing the ADRE, demanding the judge force them to hold a hearing and issue subpoenas. Mm. And the Attorney General is patiently explaining that the ADRE literally lacks the statutory power to do any of that. It is exactly like screaming at the postal carrier who delivered your high electricity bill and demanding that the mail carrier lower your kilowatt rate.
Yes.
The mail carrier is just the conduit. Sullivan made a massive fundamental tactical error by failing to understand the internal architecture of the administrative state.
He really did.
Yeah.
The Attorney General's office explicitly defines the ADRE in our brief as a nominal party.
A nominal party. What does that mean in this context?
A nominal party is someone who has no financial or proprietary stake in the actual outcome of the dispute. They are not an advocate for the HOA, and they are not an advocate for the homeowner.
They don't care who wins.
Not at all. They are literally just the gateway the paperwork passes through.
So while the state is, you know, politely explaining their role as this mailroom, the attorney for the HOA, Chad Gallagher, he files his own response.
And it is not polite.
No, it is absolutely blistering. He doesn't just defend the legal mechanics of the mandate. He goes straight for Sullivan's underlying credibility.
He attacks the whole premise.
He really does. Gallagher calls Sullivan's motion frivolous. And he points out a glaring factual inaccuracy that Sullivan included in his filing.
A very easily verifiable inaccuracy, too.
Right. Because Sullivan had run to the Superior Court claiming the agency was actively refusing to hold the evidentiary hearing.
Yep.
But Gallagher just attaches the official notice of hearing to his brief, proving that the OAH had, in fact, already scheduled the hearing for September 26, 2025.
It is a devastating factual counterpunch. I mean, Gallacher just lays out the timeline for the judge. He shows that the ADRE transferred the file as directed, the OAH accepted it, they scheduled the hearing, a brief continuance was granted because of scheduling conflicts, and the new date was set.
The hearing was happening.
Exactly. Therefore, the entire core premise of Sullivan's emergency motion to the Superior Court was fundamentally false.
But wait, if the hearing was already on the calendar, what was Sullivan actually trying to achieve with this motion? Like, why risk angering a Superior Court judge with a filing that contains easily disprovable claims?
Well, Gallacher exposes the motive brilliantly in his response. He argues that Sullivan wasn't actually upset about being denied a hearing. He knew the hearing was coming.
So what was he mad about?
He was furious that his attempt to launch that unauthorized discovery fishing expedition was denied by the ALJ.
He wanted a subpoena.
Exactly. He assumed that winning the remand from the Superior Court gave him a golden ticket, a blank check, to force the admission of anything he could dig up on this vendor.
So when the ALJ correctly enforced the strict mandate and said no?
Sullivan threw a procedural tantrum. He tried to bypass the ALJ by misrepresenting the status of the case to the higher judge, hoping Judge McKeedish would just force the subpoenas through.
Wow. And Gallacher finds this misrepresentation so egregious that he actually asks the court to sanction Sullivan.
He does.
He requests that Sullivan be ordered to pay the HOA's attorney's fees under ARS Section 12349.
And that specific statute is a heavy hitter. It's designed specifically to penalize parties who bring claims without substantial justification, or parties who intentionally use court filings to unreasonably delay or expand proceedings.
Which is exactly what Gallacher is accusing Sullivan of doing.
Right. Gallacher is essentially asking the judge to financially punish Sullivan for treating the legal system like a personal playground for his grievances.
So all of this procedural violence, the constitutional arguments about agency authority from the AG, the accusations of misrepresentation from the HOA, the demands for financial sanctions, it all culminates in a virtual order to show cause return hearing.
The final showdown.
Exactly.
Yep.
It takes place on September 17th, 2025, before Judge McKeedish. We have the official minute entry of this event. Everyone is dialed in on the virtual call. The Sullivans, the Assistant Attorneys General representing the state, and the HOA's legal team.
You would expect absolute fireworks on this call.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
After months of these aggressive filings and escalating tension, you expect a dramatic courtroom battle. But the climax is incredibly, almost painfully anticlimactic.
It really is the ultimate judicial shutdown.
Tell us what happens.
Well, after reviewing the absolute mountains of paperwork and hearing the brief arguments on the record, Judge McKeedish issues a minute entry that is essentially just two sentences long.
Two sentences for all that work.
Yes. It reads, "It is ordered denying any requests for relief in the motion to enforce judgment." And then the second sentence, "The court will not be issuing any other orders in this matter."
Wow.
A 17-minute virtual hearing to completely extinguish months and months of aggressive procedural maneuvering.
The court will not be issuing any other orders in this matter. I mean, that is the judicial equivalent of a slammed door.
A slammed, deadbolted door.
The judge is basically saying, I am entirely done with this nonsense. Do not bring this back to my courtroom. Go downstairs and do the limited hearing exactly as I instructed months ago.
Yep. Sullivan's grand strategy hit a reinforced concrete wall.
The strict rules of evidence, the doctrine of remand, the separation of agency powers. Every single structural boundary of the legal system held firm against his attempts to bend them.
Which really brings us to the core takeaway for you, the listener.
Because I'm sure people are wondering, why did we just spend all this time dissecting the absolute minutiae of an Arizona administrative dispute?
Because this case perfectly illustrates a really hard truth about the legal system. Within that system, process is the supreme ruler.
It's not about feelings.
No. The law is not an open-ended philosophical search for absolute truth, as much as we might want it to be.
Yep.
It is a highly structured, rigid mechanism for resolving conflict within specific, predictable boundaries.
Put yourself in the judge's shoes for a second. You have a homeowner waving a video in your face, claiming it's absolute proof of deception in an election. But if that homeowner ignores the rules of procedure, if they try to bypass the specialized courts, or if they try to expand a narrow mandate into a sprawling investigation, or if they sue the nominal mailroom instead of the actual adjudicator, the system is going to shut them down.
Every single time.
Regardless of what that video actually shows. Because whether you are fighting a multinational corporation over a breach of contract or just your local neighborhood association over election transparency, procedural rules are not mere suggestions.
They are the load-bearing walls of the justice system.
You cannot circumvent them just because you feel a profound sense of righteous indignation.
You really can't. And yet, beneath all that heavy procedural architecture we just went through, we are still left with the really fascinating substantive issue that triggered this entire avalanche in the first place.
The collision between old analog laws and new digital realities.
Exactly.
And that is the final thought I want to leave you with today. We started this deep dive by examining the HOA's initial defense, their claim that a digital vote cast on a cloud-based user interface was not legally a ballot.
Because it wasn't a piece of paper.
Right. So as our daily lives become completely inescapably intertwined with third-party software platforms, how will our analog legal definitions survive?
This is a huge question.
When a 19th century law demanding a physical paper trail collides with a 21st century SQL database architecture, who wins? Are legal frameworks actually flexible enough to adapt to the cloud? Or are we destined for endless expensive procedural loops just to legally define the basic terms of our modern existence?
It's definitely something to chew on.
Think about the legal definitions hiding behind the screen the next time you click I agree on an app. Until next time, thanks for taking the deep dive with us,